I'd like to reserve 6 minutes if I could.
Very good. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Jeff Lewis for the appellant. May it please the court. The essential holding of AC Properties is that the bankruptcy court is to engage in a meaningful comparison between the proposed settlement and the likely fruits of litigation if the case is not settled. That wasn't done here. Although no finding was made on the issue of probability of success, if it had been made.
Is that what AC Properties says you have to satisfy? You have to make a finding about probability of success under agency?
The court must consider probability of success.
Okay. Does that include a finding of probability of success?
It is not synonymous with finding, Your Honor.
Because I know what you're after here, and it's typically why we have ANC Properties, which is to avoid exactly what you're trying to accomplish here. Right? There's no mini-trial requirement, right?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And the court need not come up with a precise dollar amount or
right.
percentage.
Right.
But the examples that we presented in our reply brief of what courts typically do is say, yeah, there's a good chance, there's a high chance, or there's a low chance of probability of prevailing. Here, the bankruptcy court just threw up his hand and said, I don't know if you're going to win or not, but I do know delay and costs are always factors that this court always, in an AC Properties type analysis, always considers in favor of settlement. Mm-hmm. We do know that. And
they know as well that there was an appeal of the successful set-aside with respect to the state court judgment, right?
We're arguing that tomorrow in Santa Ana.
Okay. But wasn't the bankruptcy court entitled to say, gee, you know, there is a reality here in which this is $4.5 million because that set-aside was not appropriate?
I think I want to characterize it that way, Your Honor, because what happened is...
No, could the bankruptcy court consider that?
The bankruptcy court could consider the pendency of the appeal.
And not the chance that the appeal would be successful?
Keep in mind, the standard of the state court, Your Honor, is did Sanders present a meritorious defense? If he can't present a meritorious defense in that appeal, he gets nowhere.
Well, the first standard is, was he aware of it? And there's conflicting testimony about that, to be polite, right?
And yes, Your Honor, very polite. And the Superior Court resolved that question of fact in favor of my client at the trial level, and now it's going up on appeal to see if that finding of fact can be disturbed. Not.
But I guess what we're asking here is, what was the level of inquiry required by the bankruptcy court? So tell me what you think that is. Because ANC doesn't really call for very much, I mean, my view. So you tell me why I'm wrong about that.
I would say that the four factors announced in AC Properties, there has to be some particularized analysis. And all the things that this judge said about this settlement, he could have said about any settlement. He said, I want this creditor paid sooner rather than later. You could say that about any settlement. He said the litigation expense might overwhelm the cost. You could say that about any settlement. There was no finding, for example, that the litigation in the state court couldn't be concluded in a summary fashion before the watchers are able to enjoy the fruits of this money. And the evidence before the court on this was a pool of money with several investors and several borrowers was all commingled. There was no evidence presented of a specific amount of sum of funds that was converted. And the reason that's important is for the troubling of damages, which really drives the dollars here.
Right, and that's not going to change, right? You know, the factor that gets you to the troubling won't change. I mean, you're either going to get over that threshold or not, but once you do, troubling is going to happen, right?
I think it's fair to say that if tracing occurs, there's a specific finding that mm-hmm. there's $400,000, let's say that $400,000 is going to be troubled in terms of the amount that was actually borrowed. I don't think there's ever going to be a case where more than $400,000 and change is going to be troubled.
Well, we'll hear why there is in a minute.
Of course. And let me also say...
Back to your first point on probability of success, I mean, are you really saying we need to force judges, even if they don't believe it's true, to make some kind of estimate of probability of success? I mean, there are cases where I look at them and I say, gee, this really could go either way. I mean, I think pretty much every lawyer has days when cases look that way. If that's the judge's honest result, does ANC require him to do more than that?
ANC does require him to do more based on the evidence that was presented in terms of a commingled pool of money. Keep this in mind. If my client had put forth evidence, let's just say there was no opposition evidence and only argument, there would be no evidence presented to the court to support this seven-figure settlement.
My point is, looking at the evidence, if the judge says this is a push, you know, I don't know. Is that automatically not satisfy ANC Properties?
I would say this. I would say then you look at the other three factors. And then right. in terms of the other three factors, the judge said on costs, I always find in favor of settlement. That's what he said on costs. All the parties, and I think the court agreed, that on the issue of collectability, it was a non-issue. And then you're left with the interest of creditors. Well, this is a case that at this juncture, 100% of the creditors were going to get paid.
Assuming the costs aren't the concern that the court indicated that maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Isn't that kind of contextual here? Is that the court did agree, yes, you're proposing 100%. That's why you have standing. But, if this really does go south, you won't have standing because it won't be 100%.
I think the trial court, or excuse me, the bankruptcy court's absolutely entitled to make that finding if somebody had presented a budget saying, hey, this case is going to take 2 years to litigate, and we estimate attorney's fees are going to be $2.5 million, and there's not going to be a left at the end of the day to pay the creditors. Nobody rolled up their sleeves and did that analysis. They just said, it's going to be expensive to litigate. That's not enough. AC Properties requires more.
Why?
Because if the goal
What an AC property says that requires more?
Because the essential holding of AC property is...
No, don't tell me the essential holding. Tell me where in AC Properties it says what? That you're required to do something more than make an estimate of the likely cost.
I would say there's no express holding.
Yeah, there isn't.
But if you look to the purpose of AC
Properties... Let's shift gears a little bit here. This is a claim objection, right? This is not a situation in which the estate could get $20 billion if they hit on litigation.
Correct.
So your client had initiated an objection to the claim, right? Were yes. they going to pursue that at their own cost?
I think if this settlement is reversed, it'll be reduced in the state court. The litigation will happen in the state court.
Okay, so that would be at your client's cost.
Yes.
So the estate would be out nothing except the time and the uncertainty of what's going to happen.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, the other side may not agree with that, but thank you for clarifying that from your perspective.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. The final point I want to make is the court did not provide sufficient or any weight, as far as I could tell, that the watchers received $400,000 in change in payment already. And that has to be a calculus, and you're doing this essential function.
Just help me out. Where on the record was that demonstrated?
The $444,000?
Yeah.
Your Honor,
you said so.
Could I, on rebuttal, bring you that page?
Yeah.
Thank you. $300,000 that was paid by non-stipulation, wasn't it?
Sanders stipulated the release of $300,000, I believe.
I think his point is that other sources outside of this paid $440,000. I just can't. I'm not sure what the source of that is, so you're going to tell me.
I will when I come back up.
Thanks.
And if I could, I'd like to reserve the balance of my argument for rebuttal.
Fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Jang, will you be dividing your time?
Your Honor, if we may, we have divided up our time based on the questions asked. We have our topics very specifically delineated. Would it be okay to proceed that way?
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honors. Caroline Jang of Buckalter, appearing for appellees John and Mabel Watcher. On video is Nanette Sanders of Ringstead Sanders, appearing for appellee Karen Sue Naylor in her capacity as Chapter 7 trustee. And as I mentioned, Your Honor, we have divided up the argument based on the questions from the panel. But at this time, I'd like to turn over my virtual podium to Ms. Sanders to make some introductory comments. Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Having listened to counsel's initial comments and the questions of the Court, I do believe that the trustee's position with regard to the ANC factors and the issue that is repeatedly raised in appellant's briefs about the court somehow being required to make this probability of success definitive ruling, that in fact the bankruptcy court did make that ruling when the judge concluded the hearing with this notion of, I can't assign probability, I can tell you there is a possibility on either side. That is an explicit finding. The judge did, in fact, consider the evidence and make a determination that the initial ANC factor was, in fact, met by the 1919 motion and the evidence in support of it. Beyond that, I think that the briefs address the legal standards, and I suspect what the courts may, there may be questions about, I'll call them factual elements regarding the claim, and how the matter was submitted to the court.
Well, let me follow up on something that I asked to your opposing counsel, which is just, you know, let's explore an alternative reality here, okay? What happened in the bankruptcy case happens with some frequency, that the trustee and a third party got into a discussion. They reached an amicable agreement about something having to do with the amount of a claim and how a claim is going to get paid, okay? There is, at the moment at least, the possibility of another way forward here, which is to have the debtor pursue the action in state court, you know, with relief from stay. If the debtor did that at the debtor's own expense, would the state be indifferent to that, or would that be problematic for some other reason?
Well, this is not in the record, it's in the context of the general bankruptcy case. That was an option that was explored early on between the trustee and the debtor. And by the way, even though we have the same surnames, we are not related. So if I say...
I thought that would be an extremely rude question to ask. So.
I can advise the court.
Okay.
It was disclosed in our
case. Well, if Mr. Sanders is highly motivated, he thinks this is an outrage, and he never, you know, there's nothing to these allegations, is there a reason why one alternative wouldn't be, well, Mr. Sanders, you go defend it. Don't charge the estate anything, and maybe this is more solvent of an estate at the end of the day.
A couple of points there. It was an alternative that was explored. In the interim, and I'm going to share this against the context of that the debtor has now lost his third bankruptcy counsel in the case. So we've had sequencing issues, bringing counsel up to speed in order to address issues. We've had a case where it is a real property estate. There are multiple properties. The case pending with secured debt not being paid, relief from stay motions being filed, property values declining. They were very high interest rate loans. So what ideally would have been an excess estate when it was initially filed as an 11 and before it was converted now has a low probability of being such an estate, which is incredibly unfortunate because it didn't have to happen this way. But, I'm sorry, I thought you were going to ask a question there when you adjusted.
No, I'm just thinking it's painful. So, well, actually, I will ask the question. Are you suggesting that it would have interfered with the administration of the estate were you to allow Mr. Sanders to simply go defend this on his own nickel?
The trustee had the option against the scrutiny that is often with the benefit or lack of benefit of hindsight, where a trustee is criticized for not having moved with alacrity to proceed to liquidate assets when you don't have a fixed creditor body to know what you're actually liquidating to achieve, with the debtor complaining that you liquidated more than you had to. Those cases are pending as we sit here today where claims like that are made. In the interim, given a point that has been raised many times on the record by the watchers, these two individuals are not getting any younger. It resulted in the filing of, they filed their formal proof of claim, they filed a motion to estimate, the debtor filed a formal claim objection. So the topic and the issue of what we call the elephant in the room, namely their claim, has come before the court in a more streamlined process. And in connection with the motion to estimate, the court set a briefing schedule and said, I'm going to send you to mediation, which is what the court did. In the meantime, here's the briefing schedule. Let's get ready for a full evidentiary hearing in December of last year. And it was at the mediation before Judge Clarkson, in which all of the parties participated, that the trustee and the watchers reached a resolution that, in the trustee's business judgment, makes so much sense, it resolves so many issues, it allows the case to proceed, and it is the appellee's position that the bankruptcy court, against a backdrop of more than a year of experience with this case, having had argument in front of it on multiple occasions about the basis for the watcher's claim, the debtor's defenses, this was a reasonable settlement and it satisfied the A and C factors, which, as was commented upon earlier, those of us who live in this world, I can't tell you how many times I've read A and C factors, and oftentimes it raises more questions in my mind than it actually provides a solution. We tend to rely on those four factors as what we look at in deciding whether or not a settlement is reasonable and in the best interest of the estate.
Your Honor, if I may make just a couple of brief comments. I wanted to point out that the characterization of the claim that was compromised as a conversion claim is completely incorrect. The claim was based on several factors. And most importantly, a judgment from the state court reforming the deeds of trust and notes ab initio. That was undisturbed. That was not vacated by the order vacating the default. The state court even reiterated that when the debtor brought a motion before the state court to, quote-unquote, enforce its order lifting the default. The state court specifically found that that order lifting the default did not disturb the court's ruling regarding the reformation of the deeds of trust and notes ab initio. And the amounts due on the notes and deeds of trust are in and of themselves, and I can walk through the numbers, and we're all not great at numbers, but I'm looking at our estimation motion, which ER-1579, the total claim was $4,518,287.77. Just parsing out what was due on the notes and deed of trust, we already get to $1,177,949.21. That's as of September 2022. And the trustee has made clear before the bankruptcy court that the interest continues to accrue. So that
the reformation of the deeds of trust, is that included in the appeal? It's to be argued tomorrow, or is that not an issue on appeal?
It's not an issue on appeal, Your Honor. The appeal is by my clients. And the only issue on appeal is whether the state court erred in not considering a surreply that was filed by my clients that showed multiple examples of perjury and inconsistent testimony under penalty of perjury. So that is the only issue. So I also wanted to correct.
If you win that, is that a reversal or a vacate?
Let's see. Good question. If we win, it's game, set, match. That's
all right,
the judgment stands.
It's not just a vacate, go back to state court.
Correct.
Okay.
And if the debtor wins, true enough, we go all the way back to the beginning. I mean, I think there's been an answer. But the appeal that's being argued tomorrow, that's not going to end this litigation. That's either it would only end litigation in our favor. The best thing that can happen for the debtor is that the appellate court, the state appellate court, does not overturn. Sorry, affirms, and therefore we start all over because he gets to have a full litigated trial as opposed to the default prove up.
But if there is a ruling in his favor on appeal, are you saying that the reformation of the deeds of trust would still remain?
Yes, I am, Your Honor, because the state court, in fact,
is that part of the litigation against American Bankers?
Yes, Your Honor, okay, exactly.
And that just sort of, in your mind, fixes who's really liable on these allegations. Okay.
That part of the judgment that reformed the notes and deeds of trust is right. Against American Bankers and Rick Floyd, who...
Mr. Floyd, right.
Yes, so those two litigants never appealed, and that judgment remains...
That's fine.
Final. Okay. Right. And as I mentioned before, the state court already affirmed that that's final and undisturbed.
Okay.
So if we talk about even just those amounts alone, we are well over the settlement. When we consider the additional attorney's fees, the additional interest that have accrued since September 2022, we are well over $1.445 million. Even that alone, but if we also consider the conversion claim, which I understand the difference of opinion here, but Your Honor, I poured through that whole box of papers, and the checks that my clients wrote to Rick Floyd or American Bankers literally say on them Corona Del Mar property, and they literally say Callaway Circle property. The way that it's portrayed in the debtor's papers is that this is a complete fiction pulled out of thin air. They just wrote checks. They have no idea where they went. That's just not true, Your Honor. There are term sheets in the record, term sheets that say your borrower is Joseph Sanders. Your collateral property is this. You know, so this is not some crazy fiction.
This isn't just a pooled investment fund.
Correct. It is. We were designated. These monies were designated for to loan money on these properties to this lender.
There were representations.
That's correct, Your Honor. I can give you those excerpts on the record if you'd like. No, thank you, Your Honor. So, I mean, I think that's really what I wanted to cover. Simply the numbers, the sheer numbers are off. And I think I'm going to help Mr. Lewis out. There is
judge of that problem.
Right. And it actually helps me out too, because the argument here, and this is page 8 of the opening brief, the bankruptcy court, quote, failed to account for $744,000 in amounts already recovered. So ER 1615, that is an excerpt from Ms. Naylor's declaration in support of the estimation motion. She considered those amounts, and she breaks them down. The Watchers did recover those amounts from other defendants, but those are on different causes of action. There's a Catherine Floyd, she's the wife of Mr. Floyd. They settled with her on a fraudulent conveyance claim.
So you're saying that's not a set-off?
No, it's not a set-off.
Okay.
Not a set-off.
Well, what did the bankruptcy court do with that issue? Did it make a finding about that?
I don't know that the judge made a finding.
What can we do?
Well, it was certainly before the court. It was always before the court. We never hid this. I mean, the judge clerk. Well, I can't specifically state, but in mediation, we made the court aware that these amounts were received.
It just kind of goes into the big settlement sausage making thingy that results in a settlement.
Exactly, Your Honor.
From your perspective, okay.
Yes, Your Honor, and again, these were from different parties on their loans. The specific judgment against Mr. Sanders was as to those properties. And specific to conversion.
And there's no joint liability there that would suggest another result, right?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Anything further?
Not for me, Your Honor.
All right, any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll back to Mr. Lewis for 7 minutes plus.
Thank you, Your Honors. I didn't follow my colleague's citation to the record. I was relying on page ER 671.
Thank you.
And that sets forth the $444,000.
And the source of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the three specific names. Much of what Ms. Sanders offered over video related to off the record or outside the record developments since motion was decided.
Well, in fairness, I asked for it. I mean, because I asked her, you know, let's speculate on X. Why isn't that okay? So, I mean, I don't fault her, fault me. That's my problem.
I'm not fault her, but, Your Honor, yeah. I would just say changes in bankruptcy counsel and those types of things were not before the court at the time it made its
okay.
Order. And I think it is fair to say that the court had before it evidence of these other payments or this other recovery made by the Watchers totaling over $700,000 and made no express findings about it. And the reason that's important is if the essential holding of AC properties is compare the likely fruits of litigation versus this potential settlement, it's hard to do that without giving credits, at least giving Mr. Sanders the opportunity to argue that those are credits. And keep in mind, the Watchers invested just south of $1 million with Mr. Floyd, and they've recovered $744,000. And in addition to that, they're going to get, by this settlement, $1.5 million. That was the specific numerical analysis that the court was required to weigh, and the record just doesn't suggest that he did that weigh.
What has to happen for the last tranche to come in? It's not like writing a check tomorrow, right? The remaining allowed claim for 1.15 or whatever it is, what has to happen for that to get paid?
I imagine more real properties would have to be liquidated.
Okay. No, nothing else? No other success in the litigation? No? Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What about Ms. Jang's statement that the reformation of the deeds of trust will remain in place regardless of the outcome of the appeal in the state court?
I don't know that that's true, and here's why I say that, Your Honor. The same tentative ruling she was reading from where the judge said the judgment in favor of bankers is going to stay, that same ruling said, hey, this whole case is on appeal. I have no jurisdiction to even rule or touch this motion. So I think after tomorrow's appeals resolves within 90 days in state court, they take 90 days to issue the rulings, we'll get a decision. And if we go back down at that point, then Mr. Sanders can take another run at collaterally attacking the impact of the Reformation rulings as against him. He tried to attack it before, and the state court judge said, as long as the Watcher's appeal is pending, I have no jurisdiction to touch it.
But does that really matter to him? Does he deny owing that money on those loans? Is that really just about who he needs to pay?
That's exactly right. I don't think he would say, I don't owe somebody something. The question is,
paying and getting credit against that debt, if he's paying the Watchers, he doesn't care, right?
Right.
But he's going to have to pay somebody.
He is going to have to pay somebody, but we're talking about something in the order of mid-six figures as opposed to mid-seven figures.
But from the Watcher standpoint, that was an inducement to settle, right? Was just clean that up and make it simpler than it might have been to have the money traced through some other way.
I suspect that was true.
Okay.
I suspect that's right.
Okay.
The final point I'll make, final 2 points I'll make is this. There was a suggestion that there were representations made about this money being used for this loan. To be clear, my client didn't make those representations, and there was never any allegation below that my client made those allegations. The allegations were that Floyd represented to the Watchers, hey, your money is going to be used to fund, you know, this loan and be tied to this property. There was no evidence presented below in connection with this motion tying my client to Floyd in that regard. So the representations were made, but not by this Mr. Sanders. And my final point is there was some discussion about well over $4 million in claims that was established below that relies on trebling. And the trebling only comes into play if you have a specific sum. And I don't think the evidence in front of the court was enough to warrant trebling. And with that, I am prepared to submit unless there's more questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The matter is submitted. You'll get our decision promptly.
Thank you.
Thank you.